Good morning and welcome, South Carolina, from the Midlands to the Upstate. We are happy to have you join the Yard Pros this morning, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And it is an absolute delight to be here. Scott?
Yes.
It's a sunny Saturday in July in the depths of summer.
And it feels good this morning.
Does it? Well, it feels a little warm to me. I think it's because I'm a December baby, man.
Give me
45 and spitting rain. Cloudy. Give me a reason to stay inside. Drink hot cocoa. Take a nap. Naps are good.
Somebody's getting old.
Yeah, I know. Used to think naps were overrated. Now I think they're underrated.
I still don't take naps.
Really?
No.
Yeah, I wish I could. I just don't have time. You know. Hey, folks, you are tuned into the Yard Pros today. It's Saturday, July the 13th. You double-checking me? Am I right?
You are.
We're glad to have you listening and tune in today. There's a lot of things, believe it or not, there are a lot of things going on out in the landscape, Scott. I've been traveling around the great state of South Carolina, North Carolina all this week. Have seen some interesting things that we can talk about as we get into the show. But most importantly, I want to ask our listeners, or invite, I should say, our listeners to become a participant on the show. It's very easy. Without you, the show wouldn't be near what it is. You know, every once in a while, we get a little bit of praise. Hey, y'all do a great job. Well, you know what? No, you, the listener, do a great job because you tune in Saturdays. You kind of keep the ball rolling. We're talking about things in the lawn and the landscape that are pertinent points of interest. Wow, that was a mouthful, wasn't it?
It was.
Things that are happening now or maybe happening coming up soon in your lawn and landscape. That's what we want to discuss. If you have a question for us today, there are two simple ways to get in touch with us. 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. And as always, you can text us at 71307. Now, if for some reason, maybe you're a little shy, maybe you just don't want to get in touch with us today, you can find us during the week. It's very simple, folks, at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to all of our retail locations. You can click on the one closest to you, and guess what? It'll give you store hours. It'll give you a telephone number, an email address, and directions of how to find us. So a visit to the store is always fun, wouldn't you say?
I would.
Always fun. If nothing else, this time of the year, because we are still very, very busy at the stores, especially Thursday, Friday, and Saturday mornings, if nothing else, bring your favorite beverage and a lawn chair, set it up in the lot there, and just kick back and enjoy the entertainment of everybody running around and trying to purchase a little bit of sod or a little bit of fertilizer, or maybe they're shopping for some hardscape material for that next backyard patio or front walkway to your front door. Sometimes it's kind of amusing, almost comical, right, Scott?
It's like musical chairs sometimes.
It really is, isn't it? It really is. And you know what? It makes the day fun. It makes the season fun. That's the best way to look at it, right?
Yes.
Hectic.
Yeah.
You know?
And days go by quick.
Yeah, real quick. So, unlike some of my days. So, Scott, I said I've been traveling around.
You did.
And, you know, in my travels, you know, this week, I went from the reserve at Kiwi, great Jack Nicklaus course up there, up in the hills of South Carolina, mountainous terrain, all the way out to Wilmington, North Carolina one day this week, or Southport, I should say.
Southport.
Man, what a neat community.
See, I told you.
You know.
I told you.
Oak Island, Southport. Really neat little area.
I told you, I'd sell you the 20 acres right there.
I think we need the state of South Carolina ought to think about annexing it, taking it. We can invite that in. You know, it's a neat little coastal community. You know, when I was up at Reserve, and this kind of ties into our first text this morning, they just completed a driving range project. So, you know, new target greens, putting green, all that good jazz. The interesting thing, the driving range has a lot of trees planted out in the driving range. So when they redesigned, the concept was, is, hey, we've got multiple tee boxes on the front and the back of this driving range. For special events, we could have like a par three challenge. So in order to make some shots, make some kind of I guess, driving lanes, you would say. They planted some nice trees out there, and it was kind of interesting. They had 55-gallon drums with a small hole in the drum, and then they'll go out and fill the drums up with water so that water will seep out over a long period of time to water their trees. He also fertilizes trees, and that goes back to our text question. Good morning, guys. Just curious, what is the best fertilizer to put on newly planted trees to help their growth rate and mature quicker? I planted 4 maple trees that are about 10 foot tall. To me, the product that we have, and you can find a similar product if it's not convenient to come to our store. Certainly, we'd like to have you come visit us, but we have what we call a Wood Ace product, okay, is the brand name of it, made by Lebanon Seaboard Corporation. Came out of the nursery industry years ago. It is a 60% slow-release fertilizer, maybe 65%. It's a fair amount. I think it's 61 to be exact. This particular product, the analysis on the bag is that it is a triple 14, so it's a 14-14-14. Now, what I like to explain to people is don't get hung up on necessarily what the actual number is on the bag. We look at the ratio. So a triple 14 is a 1-to-1-to-1 ratio. So we got one part nitrogen, one part phosphorus, one part potassium in that order, N, P, and K. Okay, that's a 1-to-1. So it's what I would call a balanced 1-to-1 ratio fertilizer, but more importantly, it also has micronutrients. Okay, so we think it, you know, the N, P, and K are the macro. I know we got to go back to biology, right? Back to our high school science classes. Macro meaning it's needed in much greater quantities. Micro, we don't need as much. But although we don't need as much of these micronutrients like copper, sulfur, boron, magnesium, manganese, although we don't need as much of these micronutrients, they are very beneficial and very important in the plant. Now, we don't need as high a concentration in our soil profile, but if we're lacking that micronutrient in our soil profile, that's sometimes when we'll see, like, you know, a red streak in the leaf of grass or in a plant. You know, there's ways we can diagnose deficiencies based on the lack of photosynthesis, I guess you'd say, or some of the aesthetic deficiencies that show up or dependent sometimes on, sometimes we can look at it and say, hey, you got a deficiency in this.
So basically, you get a fertilizer with a multivitamin in it.
Yeah, that is a perfect way of describing that, Scott. It is a fertilizer with a multivitamin. So the old Osmocote Triple 14, they had a 14-14-14. It also had micros, if you can find that. But I would definitely go out. We want to fertilize on that drip line. Now, if we've got grass around these maples, if we fertilize like we're supposed to around a drip line, we may burn some grass because we're kind of piling fertilizer up. If you're worried about that, a good old trick as well is take an old, you know, 1-inch piece of steel pipe. Now we got cordless drills, right? So we could take a little auger bit that's 1 to 2 inches wide. They make them for planting bulbs. Cordless drill, drill a hole in the ground around the drip line. Think of your tree as an umbrella. The canopy of your tree is an umbrella. If it were non-permeable, waterproof fabric like an umbrella, where would the water run off? Mm-hmm. Okay. Where the water runs off of that canopy and drips to the ground, that's called our drip line, that's where your most active roots should be, especially on an established plant. Maybe a little different for a newer plant, but on an established plant, that's where your most active roots are. That's where you want to, if you're fertilizing trees, even shrubbery, we don't need it up against the base of the shrub or the tree. We need the fertilizer out on the drip line because it's those little white root hairs. Although we get these big 4-inch roots on some of these oak trees, it's the little white root hairs that take up all the nutrients and the majority of the moisture. Remember that. Those little white root hairs. That's what we're looking for, white root hairs. So, and we'll talk more about white root hairs, too. But first, I want to go to Walter in Greenville, who has a question about fescue. Hello, Walter, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, Mills. How you doing today?
Great. How about yourself?
Doing good. Hey, I just want to give, first of all, kudos to you guys. I've used half a dozen of these commercial companies to do my fescue yard in over 15 years, and I went on your old program 2 years ago, and my yard is great.
Great.
It's awesome. Best it's ever been. So kudos to you guys on that. You guys do a great job with that program.
We really appreciate it.
Sure. Hey, the other thing is I've got some chemicals that some the insecticide and I think the fungicide that I have not had to use because I just haven't had those problems out of it. You know, since I've been on your program, I thought I might, but they just haven't surfaced. How long, and I've had them for, I think I got them summer before last. How long will they last, or do I need to just get rid of them, or what?
You know, Walter, I think if you've got them in the garage, in a basement, somewhere where we're out of sunlight, where somewhat climate controlled. I know most garages, I wish mine was air conditioned, but it's not. But typically, you know, we're in an insulated building. If we're out of, you know, direct contact with sun or direct sunlight, if we keep them from freezing so much in the winter, you know, the products normally, I would say 3, 4, 5 years. And the key you got to remember though, some of these liquid fungicides, maybe not so much on the insecticides, but certainly on some of the liquid fungicides, they have a tendency sometimes to want to separate out over time out of solution. So if you do go to use them, make sure you shake them just as you would a can of paint. We want to make sure you shake them and you stir them before you begin to use that concentrate and mix them up. And I would hold on to them because you never know when something may pop up. You know, we've all been lucky when it comes to fescue and disease at this point in the season, but we're beginning to see a little bit more disease now because we're getting these late afternoon thunderstorms. And the result of that is because of the heat at night, late afternoon moisture, the humidity stays high through the night. That's when we begin to see more disease because the leaf has a prolonged period of wetness, you know, through the entire winter. So you may find that you need them here at the end of the summer. So I wouldn't get rid of them quite yet. I would hold on to them.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. And I've got a few spot weeds, not very many. Should I just hold off and treat those before overseeding, or should I try to get rid of them now?
I would probably wait prior to overseeding because we are getting into this warmer, more, you know, a muggy, humid, hot temperature. Your fescues, it may not show it today, which is great, but at some point the fescue is going to begin to show a little bit of stress. It is going into a stressful period, so I would avoid some post-emergent herbicides if at all possible. If you can live with the weeds for another month, month and a half, the one thing I will warn you is read the label on those herbicides for post-emergent weed control. Some of them have restrictions, and they vary. Most of them are, what, a 14-day interval, Scott, before you can reseed. So you may want to read that label, understand it, make sure you apply it a couple weeks prior to overseeding that lawn.
Okay, great. And how much should I be watered right now, right? I mean, my sprinklers are kind of on the fritz, and they don't put out the power that they used to. So I've kind of been watering more than normal. Should I be cutting back with all these thunderstorms? Because my yard looks great right now.
I mean, your yard will tell you, and that's the best thing to do is look at the lawn. It'll tell you when it needs water. We want to see it dry out a bit in between our irrigation events or a rainfall event. So, you know, if it gets to a point where we begin to see a little bit of stress, that's okay, but we do need to get water on it. We want to take it almost to the point of a little bit of stress, and then we want to water. I mean, a good rule of thumb, Walter, is about an inch to an inch and a half. An inch and a half per week on a fescue is probably, to me, going to be about right.
Okay, would that be all at once or over the course of 7 days?
2 to 3 times during a 7-day period, during that week. We don't want to take an inch and a half, divide it by 7, but we don't want to just give it an inch and a half once a week either because I think the soil will get terribly dry in between. So I would, you know, about every 2 or 3 days. Right now with the thunderstorms coming back, you know, we're warm. We all complain about it, but we're not as hot as we have been in past summers at this point in the season. So you really could probably get by about every third day at this point.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Appreciate all your help, Mel. See you around.
Sounds great. Thanks, Walter. Have a great weekend gardening.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, great phone call. We ought to just get Walter in here the next time we're not going to be here for a weekend. We'll just let Walter run the show. What do you think?
Okay.
I think he'd do a great job hosting this. What do you say?
I agree.
Yeah. So great
questions. Next Saturday.
Hey. Oh, yeah, you're not going to be here,
oh,
are you?
I'm not.
Yeah.
Or the Saturday after.
Yeah. Well, vacation time for you,
yes,
huh?
Yes, thank gosh.
Who in their right mind that's in the sod business would take vacation in July? I'm just asking.
Me?
Yeah. We'll have to discuss this off the air. What do you say? I don't blame you.
The mackerel are calling, so it's time to go.
See, I wait till August. By August, everything's just burned up and there's nothing growing.
Who wants to take vacation in August?
Exactly. That's what I asked my wife. Who wants to go to the beach in August? Apparently,
we do.
Are you
going to Florida?
No. No. We're going to our little tropical oasis in Beaufort County, South Carolina.
Ah.
Harbor Island, to be more exact.
In August?
Yeah. They got air conditioning.
They do. In the 50s down there during that time of period.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It'll be nice.
No mosquitoes, no humidity.
It'll be nice, cool, and balmy, you know, 83 degrees at 10:30 at night, if I'm lucky. Actually, it's not bad. You know, you're on the coast. You get a little prevailing
wind.
That's what I keep telling myself. A little bit of wind. It's not only good for us. You know, it's good for the lawn and landscape, too. You know, we got to remember this is a landscape show, Scott.
That's right.
A little breeze is always good. Okay, especially this time of year when we have humidity because it helps dry that plant surface out. And you heard me talk about water, and that's one of my fears now that we're into the winter months. wishful thinking, right? We're into winter months. Now that we're into kind of those hot dog days of summer where we get these afternoon pop-up thunderstorms, and we got to keep our eye at the Gulf Coast. You know, with the system, it looks like it's going to stay more out and go up through the Midwest into the western U.S. But if this thing starts coming a little more to the east, we're going to get several days of cloudy, overcast weather. Those with warm season lawns are really going to experience some potential issues with that, some increased disease potential. Us, meaning me, that has cool season lawns, to me, the bigger concern I have are these 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 o'clock in the afternoon thunderstorms saturating my lawn, and then it gets just dead still through the evening. We have no airflow, and the blades of my fescue and bluegrass just stay wet all night long, and we don't drop into the 70s until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, we're up in the 80s at 9 o'clock at night. That's when we see disease really develop and explode in cool season lawns. We also see it explode that way in warm season. The problem we run into in warm season also is when we get those cloudy mornings, and yeah, maybe we get an hour or two of sunlight at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we cloud up again, get another thunderstorm. It storms and rains all night. It's cloudy through the next morning. I saw fog this week driving at 4 a.m. to Southport. When we get those really damp, wet, foggy summer mornings and we don't get the sunlight up, we don't have the wind blowing to dry out the leaf surface, that's when we begin to see an explosion of different diseases. You know, one thing we haven't done yet this morning, Scott, is talk about our drought report.
I saw you pull that paper out.
You know, the drought report, actually, it's a little bit worse than last week.
It's growing.
Yeah, so drought has increased by 14% in 1 week. Okay. Now, we don't see as much as D1, moderate drought. What we're seeing is mostly abnormally dry D0. You know, kind of the North Carolina-South Carolina border all the way through really York County, all the way down to Horry County, about 4 counties deep in the state, are all in abnormally dry D0, okay? The other issue that we're seeing is one – you know, we're seeing drought on the rise. Probably going to continue to see that and trend that way through September. Okay, so that means we got to water more, right? People need to irrigate their landscape more. We got to be a little careful with that. We don't want to irrigate at 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. We want to irrigate at 5, 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. We can irrigate to 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. That's fine. I don't care if you blow water at 11 o'clock in the morning. The problem we run into, if we set the start times on our irrigation at 8 o'clock in the morning, by 9 o'clock in the morning, hopefully we have a little breeze to help keep us cool, and we just don't use our water as efficiently when the wind's blowing. It blows our pattern around so we don't get as good a coverage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, we're just wasting water. You know, 10, 15, 20% of that water is probably evaporating instead of soaking into the soil. So that's why we always suggest, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in the morning is a prime optimal time to irrigate, because you irrigate, you get it done, and by the time the sun gets up over the horizon and really starts beating down on your lawn, it'll dry it very quickly. So we dry the leaf blades out. But we also are not fighting and not losing water efficiency due to the wind blowing. That's normally the, you know, 3, 4 o'clock, just before sunrise is normally the calmest time of the day. So be aware of that. Water properly. And you heard me tell Walter, you know, fescue, I'd probably lean a little more towards 1.5 inches of rainfall per week. Bermuda, we'd probably get by closer to 1 inch. But needless to say, any of our grass varieties, and not just ours, but any grass variety that we're growing in the landscape needs 1 inch to 1.5 inches a week. What about a shrubbery? You know, it needs one long deep watering once a week, inch or so. Scott, we had another text question come in. Good morning, guys. I have a quick question about my Bermuda yard. I missed the application of Expo in June. If I continue with the 2025 and then do the Expo in August, would that help me with crabgrass and other weeds that I have growing in my yard? You know, it's not necessarily about the 2025. It's a cheaper fertilizer. The Expo, the 2025 is a cheaper methylene urea kind of basic fertilizer. The 2505 is the product that's MESA, methylene urea ammonium sulfate, a little bit better, higher grade, more slow release. The 2025 Expo, if you want to go 1st of August, that's fine, but it better be the 1st of August here in about 2 weeks. Because we need, it's such a slow release. It's actually not a bad thing. And the reason we like seeing that 2025 Expo go out, because I think it is on the schedule again later in the summer, We like that increased potassium because it helps a lot. We could talk about that when we come back from the hour break. It'll be a great way to kick off the second half of the show. You're listening to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. Give us a call during the break at 1-800-347-1063, and you can text us at 71307. Thanks. Welcome back to the Yard Pros Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm Mills Grant, one of your hosts today.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And it's an absolute delight to be here, is it not, Scott?
It is.
You know, the bottom of the hour, right before it went away, we were asking about the fertilizer. So, we had a texted in, good morning, guys. I missed the Expo, the 2025 application of fertilizer. And for those that maybe are not on the program, aren't real familiar with Carolina Fresh and our company and the fertilizer program, the reason we choose the 2025, it is an extremely slow release. 85% of that product is slow release nitrogen, okay? More importantly, the reason we choose it, Scott, the 25%, that last number of potassium, it leaches through soils, especially sandy soils, extremely quick, okay? It's married with that methylene urea. In essence, it's what we could call a quasi-slow-release potassium, okay? Potassium's not slow-release, but because we've got this blended into the methylene urea, which is slow-release as part of that prill, that potassium only releases as that methylene urea degrades. So it kind of extends, and that's why they call it Expo, extended potassium. That's why you probably never knew that. That's why they call it Expo. It extends the release of the potassium. It basically helps hold the potassium in the root zone where the plant can utilize it for a longer period of time. Potassium is crucial in water management of plant cells. So when we go into periods of stress, it can be a huge benefit to have increased potassium rates. When we go under stress of winter, okay, and we also get dry in the winter a lot of times because the humidity drops, it can be of huge help to us, okay? A lot of our winter kill is desiccation. It's the plant cells or the plant itself drying out, okay? If we're managing water movement better in the cellular level in the plant, we can use potassium to help manage water movement. That's what it does, right? So if we're managing our water better in the cellular structure of the plant, then we can go through periods of stress better. The grass, you know, think of it as the vitamin C that we all take when we get into the cold season. Mm-hmm. I don't know who uses it. I use Zicam and think it works, okay? If we eat an orange a day and increase our vitamin C, we normally fight off the common cold a little bit better. So it's kind of the same philosophy with the nutrients in the plant. See, there is some science involved in this.
There is.
I tell folks all the time, growing grass and growing your landscape is not rocket science, you know, but, maybe it is. Not quite rocket science. It's plant science. There you go. Hey, you got a before we go to the phone lines, I do, I was telling you I traveled a good bit, and a lot of today I want to bring up some things, Scott. Don't let me forget by the end of the show some things I've seen on some travels between some of these golf courses. This is the time of year that all of these greens renovations and things like that, I'm traveling, me personally, a lot and taking, checking on stuff, visiting with these customers, make sure everybody's happy, make sure grass is growing great. But what it's really neat for, it lets me, it kind of opens my eyes. I see the growth pattern because we're dealing with new grow-ins a lot of times. I can see how active things are growing, but I also see a lot of potential problems that we can relate back to homeowners. One of them I saw is a little worm that likes to eat grass. I've saw it on two different golf courses this
week. Really?
So we need to talk about that by the end of the mm-hmm. show. I do want to get the phone lines, but I also want to give a quick shout-out to my good friend Kyle out at the Willow Creek Golf Club out in Greer. His greens look fantastic, by the way. Not quite ready to open. He'll be opening soon, but, hey, like I said the last time, maybe you want to go play it now because you get to play it backwards. It's kind of cool. Play a golf course backwards, right? But, man, they are well on their way to having some fantastic Tiff Eagle greens out there, which is, I think, just going to really, make that golf course just absolutely spectacular. It's already in great shape. Just amazing how clean, how well the fairways look. The tee boxes right now are just spectacular. And it tells me, too, I can see this Tiff Eagle really growing fast and covering the ground fast on these new greens. Grass is growing right now. This is the optimum time of year to grow grass. If you got some weak areas in the lawn, when one of those has been a little lazy, haven't fertilized, if it's warm season grass, get it fertilized now if you need to grow it and tighten it back in, because now is the time to do it. Grass is growing phenomenally. So let's go to Larry in Woodruff. Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing well.
I just had a kind of a tricky question. We moved into a house last September at the end of the cutting season. And going through this spring so far, it looks like the previous owners just pretty much went to the hardware store and swept the floor of the feed and seed aisle and just threw it out. My front yard, all total, it's about 0.63 acres. It's all direct sunlight. And the top of the yard is mostly Bermuda. However, I've got the rest of it. I've got fescue, centipede. I've got a nice little stand of oats towards the edge of the driveway and what looks like brown top millet. So my question to you guys is, which one do I encourage and how do I weed out the other ones without hurting the one that I want to grow?
That's a great question. We get a lot of those questions about this time of the year.
And which one do you want to grow?
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. I mean, we know that. Wait a minute. Let's not ask Larry that question, because if he chooses millet, we got a problem, because the millet has a maturation date, and it's going to turn brown no matter what at some point. So that's a crop I actually suggest it a lot this time of year is on non-irrigated areas. If you just need to stabilize soil, millet can be very useful if you need a temporary fix, but it is truly temporary. But he said it, Larry, you said you got Bermuda, right?
The top third of the yard's all Bermuda, and then the rest of it just gets wacky going closer and closer to the end of the yard.
If you already got Bermuda in the top third and it's pretty well established, I think that, to me, I think I would look at it and say, hey, I'm just going to stay with Bermuda, because once you get Bermuda, you've got Bermuda. I mean, we're talking multiple applications of non-selective herbicides if you're trying to get rid of it. I would say stay Bermuda. And if you have Bermuda, we're getting late in the summer. Okay, I know it's just peaking, but as far as when it comes to seeding Bermuda, we're getting a little bit late to seed Bermuda seed, but you could go out and seed the rest of the lawn with Bermuda if you have a good way to water it, get it to germinate, and grow. That would be a good option for you, especially when you say it's out in full sun. Now, we're in the sod business, okay? We produce over 2,000 acres of sod. We produce multitude of varieties. And we're in the sod business, and I'd love to sell you sod, but at the same token, we know it's not for everyone. I mean, sod comes with certainly a higher budget cost to be able to install sod in your yard. So I think you've got to decide, you know, how much money do I want to spend? How big of an area do I have to cover? But I do feel like Bermuda may be, you know, especially in that Woodruff area, I think Bermuda may be one of the best directions to go if you're out in the full sun.
Now, my second question is, when we moved, it was a fight with the wife, but I did manage to secure the rights to raise chickens. The chickens have which now gone wild. I've got about 33 of them. They used to stay in a coop. Now they fly the fence, and they kind of roam. They always roost at night, but they do like to roam. And I'm butted up to 63 acres of pasture, so I'm constantly fighting the battle with fire ants. So what's the best thing out there to fight fire ants that's not granular that the chickens will eat and get hurt by? And also, what's the best fertilizer I can use for this lawn in the springtime next year that the chickens won't mess with?
Well, let's address the fertilizer for the chickens won't mess with. One of the things, and one of the reasons, you know, we sell Lebanon Seaboard products, and they make, you know, there's a lot of different ways that fertilizer can be made, a lot of different ways it can be synthesized. One of the products and one of the key components I've always been inclined to use is methylene urea as our slow release for the nitrogen, because some of the other competitors or products out there, even some of the products Lebanon makes, you take like what in the industry is the norm today because of price, it's cheap, is what we call a sulfur-coated urea. So they take urea, put a sulfur coating over it, and then they put some polymer over that, and it degrades over a period of time. So that actual prill of fertilizer will hang out in the thatch layer for quite a while until Mother Nature takes care of it with heat and humidity to break it down. Methylene urea is unique in the fact that it dissolves in water. It's still slow release, but you put it in water, it dissolves. I think using a high-quality Lebanon, one of our ProScape products that contain methylene urea, to me has a huge benefit for you because you can irrigate about a quarter to a half an inch of rainfall of water that night, and it should put the majority of that into the soil profile. It's still going to leave a little bit of inert ingredient on top, but not anything that's really that noticeable. As far as fire ants, if you're going to spray, one of the most economical ways, now you have to repeat spray it because it's not going to last forever. One of the most economical things is probably bifenthrin, Scott, wouldn't you say? You know, you can spray the mound and outside the mound. I would spray the entire yard if I could. If you blanket spray it a few times of bifenthrin during the spring and summer, and keep up with that, I think you'll really help control some fire ants.
And spinosad would be another one.
Spinosad also you can find it in a liquid form. It's traded under the name of Conserve, but the active ingredient is spinosad.
And it's Armory labeled.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you guys. I'll swing by your store this week.
Sounds great. You have a great week, Larry.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. Scott, hey, what's the latest I can put out zoysia sod this summer, and when is it time? When is the last time Carolina Fresh Farms will have it? Need 4 to 5 pallets. We have it year round. Okay, now inventory may fluctuate a little bit. Might find a week or two where we say, hey, we're not harvesting that particular variety because we're waiting on a field to grow in. But we harvest that year round. You can put it down year round, but when is the best time to put it down? Right now. It's actively growing. The key with sod, you want to put it down when it's actively growing. When it likes the environment it's in, warm season grasses like 90 degrees. I know it's crazy. They like 90-plus degree weather and humidity, okay? Cool season grasses, fescue does not. That's why you don't hear us talk a lot about selling fescue sod this time of year. We don't want to sell fescue sod right now. We know there are extenuating circumstances. You got to have it. That's fine, but you buy it at your own risk, okay? Because this is not the optimal time to plant it, even as sod.
And buy a bag of fungicide.
And buy 3 bags of fungicide because you're going to need them, right?
True.
If you think you need one, buy 3. So if you want zoysia, now's a great time to plant it. I know it's hot out there for us. The grass will love it, but you've got to be dedicated. Don't get more than you can lay in a half a day. If you're going to have sod delivered on Tuesday morning, I want it laid in your yard and watered in by lunchtime.
Yes.
So don't buy more than what you can do in a day. We can always come to your house multiple times.
And please wet the soil before you lay the
yes.
sod down.
Yes, please make sure you irrigate, wet the soil a night or two or three prior to installing sod. We don't put sod on dry dirt. Doesn't make sense. Okay? Just wicks all the moisture right out of that sod. Next thing you know, we got crispy sod. And when y'all call and say, hey, I got a problem, and Scott calls me and says, Mills, go by and look at the yard. When I walk in your newly sodded yard and the sod crunches underneath my feet, there's only one thing that killed it. Lack of moisture. Okay? It got dry at some point. Not saying you didn't water it. You probably didn't water it quick enough. Right? Crunchy sod under your feet is only one thing that causes it. Lack of moisture. And I can figure that one out. You can figure that one out, right?
It's pretty easy.
Well, here you go. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Dave, who's been waiting patiently. Hello, Dave, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show this morning.
How are you guys doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you?
Doing well. Here's the situation. I've got little, you know, I thought literally for a couple of days that maybe my gas tank is leaking as I mow the lawn. When I look at all these other areas that have Bermudas, like, you know, in these parking lots where you've got those intersections, you see these little white spots. I don't think it's dollar spot, but I don't know what the heck it is. And I've got fungicide I can apply to it. Is that the problem with it, or what the heck is it? Because everything else in my yard looks really good this year. The seed that I put down several years ago has done incredibly well, but I still have these little spots. It's crazy.
It's the Inca aliens.
It must be.
They're coming in at night.
I got to keep my spotlight on it now.
That's it, man. It's all a conspiracy. I know it is. I tell you, how big are the spots, Dave?
I mean, they're like, I'd say they're maybe 1.5 to 2 inches in diameter at the most.
Okay. Dave? You say it's not. Okay. I say it is. It's dollar spot.
So we got to go get it done. We got to go lay it out. Okay.
Yeah, and here's the deal with dollar spot, and it's one of the things, and I'm glad you came in or called in this morning and mentioned this, because that was another thing that I really, really noticed this week. I'm seeing much more dollar spot popping up across Bermuda right now. I'm seeing dollar spot on zoysia grass. I'm seeing dollar spot in fescue. I'm seeing dollar spot everywhere. I'm surprised that the fungus hadn't figured out how to attack the concrete in my driveway. I wish it would. Maybe it would eat the algae, and then I don't have to pressure wash, right?
There you go.
But it's got to be dollar spot. A couple of things that will really help you control the dollar spot. I mean, certainly a fungicide, but you got to choose the fungicide properly to control dollar spot. Fungicides can certainly be used, but there's some cultural things we can do as well for dollar spot. Number one is we got to manage the leaf wetness, how long, the length of time that the grass blades are wet, okay?
Okay.
Sometimes we can manage that by merely going into that little box that's in your garage that you just, you set that thing about 8 years ago when they put your irrigation in and you forgot you even had it. If you open up the door on that little box, it's got buttons and everything in there. If we'll merely just turn that thing to the off position and only water when we need to water, and if we'll quit watering in the evening or overnight hours and water in the early, early hours of the morning, we can help control dollar spot.
About 4 a.m., but I probably need to water less, I guess, if that's the case.
That's it. We need less leaf wetness on the blade. Here's the other thing. We got to make sure we got plenty of fertility in that soil or for that plant as well. If Bermuda is healthy, years ago the mindset was, well, if I keep healthy Bermuda, it grows so aggressively, it'll outgrow a little bit of dollar spot. I'm convinced the dollar spot fungus has changed over the years and has become from a nuisance aesthetic problem to what can become a detrimental problem in a lawn. I think perhaps that fungus in your particular lawn, maybe it's become a little bit stronger strain where it's causing more damage. Now, here's the good thing with dollar spot. If we stop it, we clean it up. Typically, dollar spot doesn't really go much into the crown or below the crown of the plant. It doesn't cause a whole lot of long-term damage. It's short-term damage. It's a leaf spot, okay, is what it is. Now, here's the other thing, too, to help you identify a dollar spot. These mornings, like tomorrow morning, we're supposed to get a lot of rain really throughout the state this afternoon, tonight. Tomorrow morning, we're going to have a lot of moisture, maybe some dew on the grass. Get up early in the morning and look out in that Bermuda. If you see what looks like little spider webs all in your yard, it's not an invasion of spiders. That is the mycelium. That's how the fungus spreads. That's how it grows. Okay. That's the fruiting body, the mycelium. So that's little webbing mycelium that is blooming because of cooler temperatures, no sunlight during the day. It dries off when the sun hits it during the day. You can't see it. In the morning, that little mycelium web will hold the dew, and you can really see it stand out. Looks like little bitty, 2-inch spider web circles all in your yard.
Okay. But is a loft the thing to use to?
Nope.
If I do see it, to bust it out?
No, a loft is a insecticide, so you'll want to use something. Eagle actually does pretty good on dollar spot, Headway or Pillar.
Headway, boom, that's what I got. I got brain locked
in. All right, use your Headway, man.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you. You have a great weekend.
Yep, you too.
Always good to hear from you, Dave. Dave's a great guy, man. He's been calling in, I think, since day one. We hear from him occasionally, and I like that, so... The dollar spot, man, it's crazy right now, okay? I mean, absolutely crazy how much dollar spot I'm seeing. Here's the other thing. If you have a St. Augustine lawn, gray leaf spot is running rampant right now. Now, gray leaf spot is more of a aesthetic thing, but, hey, fungicide can go a long way. It can help clean it up. My fear is, too, Scott, we talk about leaf spots like gray leaf spot, dollar spot, things like that. And we talk about the spot, let's just call them the spot diseases, right? We say, okay, they're more aesthetic, Mills. And sometimes as a professional, we may say that. A golf course that's got 75, 80 acres of Bermuda grass may say, hey, it's aesthetics, we'll live with it. They understand what they're doing. Your home lawn, my fear is if it goes uncontrollable for a long period of time and you're not doing things on the back end to make that grass healthy at the end of the season, we don't want to go into winter dormancy with an unhealthy lawn, okay? So if it gets to a point it's out of control, you need to treat it. If you can live with it, you may want to live with it. If it's just this one small area in the lawn, live with it for a week or two and see if it corrects itself. Try slinging a little bit more fertilizer. See if you can grow it out. Make sense? But that was one of the things. The other thing, Scott, that I really, really saw, and then we'll get back to the text because I don't want to forget to mention this. I know it's July, but believe it or not, the fall armyworm is here. I got a report from NC State Turf Files Extension, got an email alert right before the 4th of July in June. Said, you're not going to believe it. Basically, the email, and it went to a lot of us professionals, said, you're not going to believe it. That's right, army worms in the state of North Carolina in June, awfully early. Typically, we don't see army worms till the end of July, 1st of August in South Carolina, okay? I guess they skipped over South Carolina this year, went to North Carolina. Because when I was out Southport, all the seagulls were 3 miles inland on the driving range.
Smorgasbord.
And I was like, man, what are y'all feeding those things? And the grass didn't look terrible, okay, from a distance. He said, no, I just sprayed yesterday for army worms. We rode out there, man. Army worms galore. Must have been 400 seagulls having a heyday in the driving range. Now, he's closed right now, so the army worms are doing him a service. They're mowing his driving range, right? We get damaged this early because army worms eat the grass, and we get damaged this early. Other than aesthetics, there's no issue. There's nothing physiologically damaging other than
Plenty of time for it to grow
losing
back.
Leaf blades. You got plenty of time for the grass to grow back. It's not a big – but here's my fear. If we're seeing army worms this early, you do need to treat them because they will turn a life cycle in as little as 2 weeks. So the population's just going to keep increasing. But you need to be on the lookout. If you see a bunch of birds you pull up in your lawn, especially Bermuda lawns and fescue lawns, okay, zoysias – number one, there's more lignin is a compound in leaf structure, okay? The lignin content is really high in a zoysia leaf blade. That's why it's hard to cut. It's very tough. So, one, they can't eat a lot of it. Number two, I've always heard that when that army worm, you know, you look at it, it's a naked worm. It has no hairs on it. Okay, it's what we call a naked worm. As it crawls across the zoysias, it irritates their bottom. So typically you don't see a lot of army worm damage in zoysia lawns. But if you've got Bermuda, if you've got fescue, you need to be, if you see a bunch of crows, if you live at the coast, see a bunch of seagulls, if you see a bunch of birds pecking at your yard, you need to get a little soapy water solution, do a drench, see if you can flush some army worms up, and you need to get out and apply something. So, you know, keep an eye out for army worms. They are definitely on the move, and they're out there. Scott, we do have a – is it too late to hydroseed Bermuda grass? No, you need to get it done now, though. I mean, really get out there and get it done now. Thanks for the info on zoysia. If need to put down in half a day, how many pallets can three people, my wife and a 13-year-old son, put out? Well, that 13-year-old son, man, I think he ought to be able to knock out about three or four pallets himself, right?
Especially the hand rolls.
In a half a day. Yeah, with the hand rolls. I mean, I think four or five pallets with three people. Yeah. If you're dedicated, you get the driver to space it the right way in the yard, I think you could get that out in a half a day to three quarters of a day, and that's acceptable. But I don't – if I only had three people and they're homeowners, I don't think I would go
no
for
more than five.
12 or 18 pallets. You may want to split that into two different ones. I'm declaring war on Poe Annua this year. I'm told I need to start in September. What's the course or schedule of application, and what do you recommend beyond common prodiamine? Prodiamine is one of the best, okay, out there for POA control. Dimension does pretty good with it as well in home lawns. I would go with one of those two. I would really kind of lead with prodiamine, but I will say with this texter, says, thanks, JT. JT, I would do wish you would maybe call into one of our local stores. It's an 864 number. If you get in touch with Scott this week, I would like to talk with JT more and more about his – I don't want to scare all the listeners today or JT, but I would like to know what he's done in the past and what kind of POA problems he's having, because we are seeing more and more resistance. POA's becoming resistant. It's become resistant to Roundup in some instances, okay? Where we use the same product year after year after year, we begin to see some resistance. But I'm still real strong on prodiamine. And, yes, mid to late September, depending on where you live, could be a potential start date to get your first round of pre-emergent out. Sometimes I think the reason people see it is they wait too late, Scott, okay? So, JT, I think you bring up a valid question, something we'll continue to talk about in the next few weeks as we take our journey through the rest of the summer and head towards fall. I just want to say that. It makes me feel good.
Yes.
Folks, we hope you've enjoyed the Yard Pro Show today. It's been a delight talking with you. Brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. You can find us during the week. It's very simple at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. We hope you have a happy week gardening. And, hey, keep yourself and your landscape hydrated this week. Have a great week gardening.